And we're joined now by Nora Ahmed, the legal director of the Louisiana ACLU. She is transitioning, moving from the center of the universe, New York City, to New Orleans. And a fascinating person. She was born and raised in Portland, the child of immigrants, an Egyptian Muslim, and a South Asian Hindu mother. And she had her sights set on a legal career, and that's what she's done. And she's been in New York working for big firms, practicing law, and has decided to move to the great city of New Orleans. And she recently wrote an op-ed piece in The Advocate about policing, and the title that accompanied the column, Putting Racist Policing on Trial in Every Case. And we'll talk with her about that. And certainly her hometown of Portland is in the news, as in right now, today. But before we get there, Nora, you are a young person on the move, ready to conquer the world, and decided to come to New Orleans. Why did you make the move?
Well, Jim, I've always been very interested in trying to understand what more can be done for communities of color in this country. And so right after college, I ended up teaching first in the south of France at a vocational high school. I thought it was really important to try to understand other countries and their values and what they believed in. And right before that, I had been in West Africa collecting garbage, trying to understand how the after effects of 9/11 affected one of the least westernized countries in the world at that time. And all of that really brought me to New York City, where I taught in the South Bronx for about 4 years. And as I worked with my students, who were predominantly students of color, I believe we had no white students in the school in which I taught, I started to see that it was incredibly important to understand that in communities of color, we need to start speaking out and showing that justice is not being done. And as I learned from my students, I decided it was really important to move forward and get a legal degree. And that took me to Montreal in Canada, where I wanted to get both a common law and a civil law degree, knowing full well that Louisiana was a state that practiced civil law. And I got that degree. And at that time, I really did want to go and do public sector work, but we were dealing and reeling with the financial crisis. And I ended up getting a job in New York City. But I thought that was going to be very instructive in terms of understanding how do the most elite firms in the world practice law, so that one day I could take that and actually use that and work with communities of color to better their circumstances. So it was always in the plan for me to come and work with communities of color. And it happened that my executive director, Alana Odoms-Hebert, was very invested in making the ACLU of Louisiana a place that responded to the needs of communities of color. And her desire to expand and grow that office so that we could actually meet the needs of the community in a way that was even better than what's occurring right now was very interesting to me. And I thought that I could hopefully bring forward a lot of the connections that I had made in New York City to help us try to rectify some of the issues that we were seeing taking place in Louisiana. So that's really how I ended up agreeing and being delighted to take on this job.
Well, we're pleased you're here, hopefully for a while. And Nora Ahmed is the legal director for the ACLU in Louisiana. 877-217-5757 if you'd like to join our conversation. The Trump administration, in a column by Michelle Goldberg today in the New York Times, according to a lawsuit filed by Oregon's Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum on Friday, federal agents have been using unmarked vehicles to drive around downtown Portland, Nora's hometown, detain protesters, place them in the officers' unmarked vehicles since at least last Tuesday, and the protesters are neither arrested nor told why they're being held. And today, neither side is backing down. Protesters and federal agents continue to clash in downtown Portland following an infusion of federal resources in the area. The Trump administration persists in seeking what is termed political gain from what is happening, and this is an election year with an election 15 weeks away. But some people are obviously extremely upset. And when I read this story, the most recent one from CNN, it actually says the Trump administration persists in seeking political gain. That is written as though it's a given. And do you view it that way? Is this all about politics in your hometown of Portland, Nora?
I think it's always very difficult to say whether something's all about politics or not. But I would definitely say that there's no need for federal agents to come to the state to deal with protesters who are exercising their First Amendment rights. So if you're asking, does it appear to be a show of political might or force? I would agree that's the case. And the articles you're describing indicate that the behavior of these federal agents is questionable and that we're not actually definitively identifying any violations. We're simply seeking to silence them.
Well, there is a report that the president is intending to use this strategy in other cities, perhaps Chicago and go down the line. It could even be New Orleans. What do you think about this kind of strategy being used by the federal government?
Well, I think it would be better if the federal government actually had a federal strategy to deal with COVID-19 as opposed to a federal strategy to try to silence the voices of protesters. So my response to that is I do not think the federal government should be getting involved in trying to show its might about what individuals should be allowed to say or not be allowed to say. There are much bigger issues that it should be focusing on at this moment in time.
Jim in Walker. Jim, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Nora. That's not Jim. There we go. Jim, good morning. You're on with Nora Ahmed, legal director, ACLU. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. I have got a question for you, and it kind of dovetails into the statement you just made. And that is, Donald Trump was previously enjoined by the court that he could not block people on his Twitter feed who posted things that were critical of him because it was considered an extension of his public political office. The issue is that on social media, especially on Facebook, that governmental entities at the state, local, and federal level, as well as elected politicians and police forces especially, are blocking users and deleting posts.
All right. What about what's happening on Facebook as far as Jim saying that what would be viewed as public speech is being stymied, Nora?
Could you ask that one more time,
Jim? Yeah, I don't know if you heard all of what Jim said, but he said that on Facebook that a lot of public agencies, federal and local, are using their discretion to block people who don't agree with them. He's saying, is that something that should be done, or is that an infringement on free speech?
I think social media is something that we need to look at a lot more closely to see what those rights would be, because we understand that there's also a lot of hate speech that makes itself readily apparent on social media. At the outset, to the extent that there are criticisms of decisions that federal, state, and other municipalities are making, I would say that those should be allowed to stand.
All right. 877-217-5757 is your number. Talk at talklouisiana.org is our email address. Nora Ahmed with us for the remainder of the hour, the new legal director for the ACLU Louisiana, and we're back in 2 minutes. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. We have some folks lined up to talk with Nora Ahmed in her maiden voyage as a guest on Talk Louisiana, the new legal director for the ACLU in Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Trey in Central. Trey, you're on the air with Nora. Good morning to you.
Good morning. I'm really happy that you have someone from the ACLU today, as I actually may need their service. I'm Trey Bennett, the protester who protests the COVID-19 issues going on at Life Tabernacle Church, and have received a lot of violent actions against me that I think have been spurred on and encouraged by.
All right. We've covered this on the show, and I appreciate you calling, Trey. And it is certainly a departure from what we're discussing right now. But as far as people seeking the ACLU for assistance, I know you welcome that. But what's the best way to do it, Nora Ahmed?
We have an online form that individuals can go fill out that online form that's a complaint, and then we'll get that through our system, and then we'll make an assessment about whether that's something that we can take on based on, you know, what we are working on at that time and our capacity.
And Matt says the Associated Press is reporting 150 federal troops will be going to Chicago to replicate what is going on in Portland. 877-217-5757 is your number. Dan downtown. Dan, you're on the air with Nora Ahmed. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Yeah, Ms. Ahmed. Do you see evidence that, much like legislators pandering to their corporate benefactors before becoming seven-figure lobbyists, judges have to render pro-employer decisions in order to get on big firm letterheads upon their retiring?
All right. What about judges being at odds with fairness? Obviously, they have to raise campaign funds, and people who run for office often are beholden to the people who got them there. Is that a systemic problem, or is that something that is not that big of a deal, Nora?
I don't think it's ever not a big deal if there's a feeling that a judge is not making a decision based on the record before them. But I would say that to the extent we are electing our judges, it is up to the people to hold them accountable. So to the extent there are decisions being made that the people believe are not in alignment with the record before those judges, then it's incumbent upon us to ensure that they're not reelected and put in those positions.
877-217-5757. Still time to talk with Nora Ahmed, who is in the process of moving to New Orleans from New York. She'll be, and already is, the legal director for the ACLU in Louisiana. Patrick in Innisfil Estates. Patrick, good morning. You're on with Nora. Hi, Patrick.
Hi. I've read in the news about the ACLU protecting renters and trying to protect the eviction moratoriums. Yet at the same time, the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution says that no one shall be deprived of their life, liberty, or property without due process, and that the taking of property without just compensation is illegal. And the 14th Amendment basically states the same thing as the Fifth Amendment. Why are y'all violating the Fifth Amendment?
All right. What about protecting or trying to protect renters who are being evicted during these times? Is that a prudent move, I think Patrick is asking? And as we know, Patrick has called before. He is a landlord. He looks at it from a different perspective. But what about renters who can't make their payments and are being evicted and in some cases being given less than 24 hours notice to get out? What do you think?
I think when we're talking about a global pandemic, even the law needs to take into account what the current circumstances are. And so while there are definitive principles in place that are intended to protect the community writ large, we still need to understand that individuals lost their jobs and their vocations and their monetary streams in ways that they had not anticipated. And so there needs to be some amount of time that allows for the world to catch up with the global pandemic.
All right. A listener, this is Holly in the Garden District, asking about the Supreme Court decision of a few days ago concerning admitting privileges in Louisiana. The court ruled 5-4, John Roberts casting the deciding vote that the law was unconstitutional. Roberts said he did so based on precedent because the Louisiana law was almost, I think, actually was identical to the Texas law, which had already been shot down by the court under a different configuration. Was it a surprise that this was a victory for your side, Nora?
I don't see it as a surprise at all. I think if you're looking at Chief Justice Roberts, he definitely comes forward indicating that he is not seeking to be partisan, but he's consistently been on the side of attempting and working to uphold prior precedent. And so it was no surprise that even though he disagreed with the decision in Women's Health, that when it came time to decide June Medical, he had to make the determination that the court had already ruled. And so he had to join the other four in making the determination that the Louisiana law itself was unconstitutional.
Well, the abortion issue will go on, as we know. It's been fought since Roe v. Wade was enacted in January 22, 1973. So we're coming up on 48 years. Nora, John Roberts is no liberal. Some believe that if he were given another way of viewing this, he might very well vote with the conservatives on the court. Is that a concern?
I think that's potentially the case. I think here we had a situation where the Louisiana law was almost identical to the Texas law, which gave him very little wiggle room to go against prior precedent. Am I of the view that a different paradigm may have him on a different side? I think that is possible. And that, I would say, is unfortunate, but it is possible. And it's going to be up to the record in the lower court to show that whatever new statute itself has only been put in place to impose an undue burden on women seeking an abortion. And if that prevails, it's still going to be a challenge to overturn Roe v. Wade, as it should be.
Now, up until very recently, Louisiana and your native state of Oregon were the only states where you could go to jail with a non-unanimous verdict. That was overturned by the Louisiana legislature, and there was a court ruling basically saying that you have to have a unanimous verdict, and it goes back and forces other cases to be relitigated. Your thoughts about that decision from the high court?
Well, we now have a clear determination that you must have a unanimous jury in order to get a criminal conviction. As you indicated, the question is, will that rule be retroactive? And that question is now going up before the court in Edwards v. Vinoy. And it will be interesting to see how that turns out, because what we have are three justices in Ramos who were relatively clear that there has never been a rule that states have been allowed to have non-unanimous juries. Their argument was effectively, it's always been the case that the Sixth Amendment applies to states. But what we also have, two justices that agreed that that rule should no longer be the case, they found that the 1972 Oregon case was in fact being overturned. And that accords with the three dissenters in that case. So the question to go up will be, is Ramos somehow a new watershed rule that therefore requires us to apply it retroactively? Or is Ramos just a rule that has always been in place and the court simply got it wrong in Apodaca and that was simply an aberration? But it's really going to play around what those five justices have to say about whether or not this is somehow a new watershed rule of criminal procedure. And that's where we're going to play. And I think based upon the notion that someone could be wrongly convicted and all of the evidence that shows the fallacies in having non-unanimous juries, it should be the case that the rule has retroactive application.
All right. Finally, Tracy at the Capitol noting my introduction of you being the child of an Egyptian Muslim father, a South Asian Hindu, Indian Hindu mother, and growing up in Portland, did you face discrimination, or is this something that only happens in our region of the country? How was it growing up in Portland as a minority?
I think it's very interesting when you grow up in a largely white community, because at times you're working so hard to fit in that you don't understand what society is telling you about what it means to erase who you are and what you look like. So I remember growing up and watching TV and noting that the Ku Klux Klan had done something and looking at my mom and asking if they were going to come after us, because I understood that there was something about being non-white that made you a target. And I understood that when I went to school, I was an aberration, but I think it was very clear that society had signals indicating it was important to try to fit in and not focus on, quote, what made you different. But I think that those are very difficult things to actually contend with when you're a child. So I did not face undue violence in any way by, you know, virtue of the individuals by which I was surrounded. But I think I was definitely a child that grew up understanding now that what I was going through was a society that systemically tries to silence people of color.
Nora Ahmed, we'll be calling on you again soon, and hope you do very well in the great city of New Orleans. She has been around the country, grew up in Portland, has been living in New York City for a while, and she is now part of our world in Louisiana as legal director for the ACLU. Signature support comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Thank you for listening. Back tomorrow. Stay tuned.